got back into town, I crashed a staff meeting here on Tuesday. They weren't expecting me, but they were very kind. They hadn't changed the locks or anything. I was able to get in. And we were talking a little bit about just sort of how things had gone through the summer. And I think it was Christine who said, one nice thing was all of the guest preachers had all of their information for the bulletin in by Wednesday at noon. Just a little piece of information. So I had it in by Thursday at noon, which is 24 hours earlier than I usually have it in. And then I changed my mind, which is always the danger with getting it in on time. So the scripture reading is not going to be Luke 2:25-35. And it's actually not even going to come now. I'm going to read from a psalm at the end of the sermon. So it will be Psalm 30 that I'll be reading from. And I have been away for a while, and it's really, really nice to be back. And first of all, I do want to thank all of you for giving me this gift of time. I didn't really realize how much I needed the breather until I stopped to breathe and felt that sense of relaxation and rest come in. There are several projects that I worked on while I was away, and I will talk about those in the weeks to come with the session and here and in some classes. But today I want to talk about another process, perhaps a less formal one, that I was engaged in during these last couple of months, and I've come to call it seeing what's there. And it refers to three activities, if that word is, that might be overstating it, but three things that I worked on and reflected on during this time. The first one was quite literally seeing what's there, going to Michigan and spending 2 months there and actually seeing what is in Grand Rapids and in the state of Michigan. Chandler moved there 9 months ago, and aside from a couple of brief visits, mostly in the dead of winter, which is not the time when you want to get to know the state of Michigan, that's all I'd had a chance to see. And so it was great to be there and see it in the sunlight and the long days and the beautiful place. So that was one of the things that I'll talk about a little bit, is seeing what's there in Grand Rapids and in Michigan. The other two have more to do with Sabbath time, with sabbatical time, time for intentional reflection and seeing what's there on the deeper levels of experience. I took some time to reflect, for one thing, to reflect on the past 5 years since my last sabbatical from Montclair, and see what's there in the experience of those years from this perspective, from this moment in time. And those were some fairly busy years, fairly intense years. So to have a chance to stand back from it a little bit and do some spiritual reflection was a very important thing. And the other was to look at Montclair Presbyterian Church and see what's here. At the heart of our life together and at the heart of my work with you over this next year that we're about to embark on. So those were the three things: seeing what's there in Michigan, seeing what's there in the past 5 years, and seeing what's there today in our relationship, in our ministry together. So in terms of Michigan, I had never been there at all before last year when Westminster Presbyterian Church wanted to interview Chandler and flew him out. I think it was actually mid-August of last year, so exactly a year ago. And I had no sense of what the Midwest was about. I had always flown over it, I guess, or driven farther south than that when we used to drive across country when I was a kid. But I'm from here. I was born at Kaiser in Oakland. I am a Bay Area kid. So the thought of spending extended time in the Midwest caused a little trepidation for me. And part of that was exacerbated by the fact that Chandler had bought a condo and furnished it all by himself. So I had no idea. Well, he'd sent me little cell phone pictures, and it looked like he'd made some nice choices in terms of furniture and colors and such things, but I didn't really know what it was going to be like to walk into essentially somebody else's place. and say, honey, I'm home. And that went okay. And several of the women from the church were saying, oh, so you're here for a couple of months. Maybe you can warm up Chandler's place a little bit. And I bought a broom. I don't know how you live someplace for 7 months and not have a broom, but a few little things like that. Some houseplants, a coffee table. It was functional before, but it's a little cozier now. So that was part of my project right at the beginning, was to see if I could feel at home in that condominium. But it's actually a beautiful place. It's right downtown. They're revitalizing the downtown in Grand Rapids. And this was the old YMCA building that was built in maybe 1915, 1917, something like that. Beautiful brick and limestone building that's been completely renovated into these condominiums now. And it's gorgeous. And it's brick. Who'd have thought you can build things with brick if you don't live, you know, on the fault line? It's up on the 8th floor. And one of the reasons he wanted that condo was, if you look out the southern windows, it looks directly across Veterans Park to the steeple of Westminster Presbyterian Church, which is a lovely steeple. So it's a way for him to be in prayer and be connected with the people of his church when he's home, when he's sitting in the one comfortable chair in the whole condo looking. We'll work on that one. I haven't taken care of that. So it's a wonderful place, and beautiful views, and fun place to be. And one of the experiences that everyone had told me was true, but it's something that needs to be experienced firsthand, is the incredible warmth and hospitality of people in the Midwest. There are 1,200 people in Chandler's church, and I think we're invited to all of their homes for dinner and made it to most of them in the 2 months that I was there, just wanting to meet me, wanting to make me feel welcome, wanting me to have a chance to know who they are and them to have a chance to know who I am. So that's a remarkable thing. And then Grand Rapids, and I think I've mentioned this before, in Grand Rapids, statistics say 60% of the people of Grand Rapids go to church on Sunday. So we're here at 6% in the Bay Area. So one of the experiences of being there is I don't have to apologize for being Christian all the time. I can say, well, I'm the pastor of a church in Oakland, and people say, oh, isn't that wonderful? And we talk about it instead of blaming me for the Crusades, which has happened before. It's refreshing. And Grand Rapids is really an interesting city, a small city, so there's kind of the urban thing and the small town thing both going on at the same time. Beautiful art museums, good restaurants, independent bookstores, there's no traffic. So there was a lot to explore, and a lot that one could explore on foot, especially living downtown, walk down to the river, go hear music in the town square. And then we did have the 2 weeks of time to travel upstate, to travel up north, the Upper Peninsula, and see these gorgeous forests that go on forever. And every time you come around the corner, there's another lake, either one as big as the ocean or a nice little lake tucked in. Birds. I saw loons. Never seen loons before. Two loons and two little loon babies when we were up kayaking on this one little lake one day. Wildflowers. There's no drought. The place is blooming like crazy. It was gorgeous. Quite magnificent. It's kind of flat. Not really flat, but if you're used to the Sierras and Yosemite and stuff, it's kind of flat. But it's a lovely place, and I deeply appreciate having the time to see what's there. I'm not ready to move there quite yet, but it was wonderful. It was a wonderful, beautiful place. It's so nice to know that's not for me. So a sabbatical is all about having time. Time is such a scarce commodity in the world these days. And the fact that it's commodified at all is kind of a scary thing. But the word Sabbath is the Hebrew word for cessation, for stopping. And I won't presume to speak for you, but when I'm busy in my day-to-day life, in my day-to-day work, I miss things because I don't have the time or I don't take the time to pay attention. If I open my email and there are 25 of them, I'm going to read them quickly and I miss details sometimes. In conversations, if I'm thinking about the next thing that I have to get to or that I have to do, I miss moments of connection that are possible there in those conversations because of that sense that there's not enough time. It's a scarce commodity. And even deeper than that, I miss when I'm too busy, I miss the chance to feel my way through things. That takes time to move into the emotional and the spiritual truth and experience of a particular thing, to explore the emotional content and subtext of a situation or an event. I miss that opportunity to notice the spiritual messages and lessons and truths that are hidden in life, in my life, in the life that we share together, because I'm busy. And I also miss the chance to appreciate accomplishments and celebrate them, because, okay, that's done, on to the next thing. And my accomplishments and your accomplishments, on to the next task, but and not have the chance to say, look what we did. But I can't tell you how amazing it was to come back here at the end of last week and walk around here not having been here for 2 months and see all the things that were completed in the building and in the whole plant and say, wow, look what we did. It's beautiful. It's amazing. When you're in the midst of a day-to-day and you see each thing and the contractor working and so on, it's different than coming and saying, oh, this is beautiful and complete and should be celebrated. Biblically, we are commanded to have a Sabbath every 7 days. It doesn't say thou shalt not be busy the other 6 days, or thou shalt not work hard, or thou shalt not even get stressed and overwhelmed sometimes during the 6 days. The commandment says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. See to it that you spend intentional time with God and with getting back in touch with the source of life, that you relax into the rhythms of nature and trust the regenerative power of the Spirit at least once a week. And even that gets lost. There's a wonderful poem called Trough by Judy Brown. This is when I spent some time with poetry this summer as I was working my way through some of these things. And this one says, there is a trough in waves, a low spot where horizon disappears and only sky and water are our company. And there we lose our way unless we rest, knowing the wave will bring us to its crest again. There we may drown if we let fear hold us within its grip and shake us side to side and leave us flailing, torn, disoriented. But if we rest there in the trough, in silence, being with the low part of the wave, keeping our energy and noticing the shape of things, the flow, then time alone will bring us to another place where we can see horizon, see the land again, regain our sense of where we are and where we need to swim. I knew even before leaving for Michigan that there was one reality from the past few years that I had not had the time to ponder and was going to need to ponder, to open up and unpack and hold in God's light in order to see more clearly what's there at the deeper levels, that I needed to let God's light clean out some of the shadows that still clung to my spirit. And some of those shadows were left from when there had been some serious conflict here in the church, especially in second half of 2006, first half of 2007, that year. And I think we weathered it well as a church. I think we learned a lot about how to work our way through disagreements with love and with respect and attentiveness. And I'm actually very proud of this congregation. In conversation with Leonard through the summer, as things were worked through, and the that there was a town hall meeting here last Sunday, possibly an unfortunate term these days. But Leonard said, yeah, Arthur had come up to me and said, since it's a town hall meeting, you want me to organize some protesters to scream and yell and keep anything productive from happening. But apparently it was worked through that disagreements could be handled and processed and revisited as ideas were made clear and information brought forward and opinions expressed. But I still carried some pain with me, largely because that year of conflict in the church had unfortunately, very unfortunately, coincided with a very difficult time in my own personal life. And it made it really hard to be lifted out of that trough when it felt like it was just turmoil and disorientation and struggle, that I was stuck there flailing and disoriented, as the poem says. But with the help of good friends and good therapists and great people to be in leadership here and a lot of hard work on a lot of people's parts, everything is moving forward with great energy and creativity at this church, and great activity immediately. I don't think there was ever a serious lull in the active life of this congregation. So I never really had the time until this summer to ask God to accompany me back into that trough so that I could see what was there. And the reading from Daniel that Sloan read, Daniel is a prophet. He's in the court of King Nebuchadnezzar, this incredibly powerful king of Babylon. The king's been having disturbing dreams, and he wants them interpreted. So he calls the court magicians in to have them interpret his dreams. But the test is he's not even going to tell them what the dreams were. They have to know what the dreams were and then interpret them. Not great, nonviolent communication when it comes down to it. And if they didn't do that, they were going to be killed. So there was a serious problem there. But then the king was going to call Daniel. And Daniel said, only God will be able to lead me through this. And then Daniel has a dream where God reveals to him what Nebuchadnezzar's dreams have been and what the interpretation of them shall be. And that's when Daniel sings this song of praise that was read. Blessed be the name of God. And I'm going to put it in feminine pronouns because that was part of my prayer this summer too. Blessed be the name of God from age to age, for wisdom and power are hers. She changes time and seasons, deposes kings and sets up kings. She gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. She reveals deep and hidden things. She knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with her. She knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with her. That song of praise says that we can trust God to go into our dark places and shed light there. We can trust God to go down into the trough with us and lift us back up and show us what to swim toward. So when I took some time this summer and prayed my way through some of this and read and thought and pondered my way through some of this, what I found at the heart of it that was still there in those shadowy places was grief. I had done good work on anger and forgiveness and trust and trustworthiness and a wonderful exploration of nonviolent communication and some professional coaching. But what had been set aside in the midst of the busyness and the other things that needed to be done was the grief. And the gift of the sabbatical time was the time to walk through that and to feel what needed to be felt and then to put it behind me, rather than carry it in this unexplored place in my own soul. To take time to face the losses that the time of conflict represented to me personally. I'm not talking professionally here. There are other lessons learned. The lost innocence and the lost naivete, the lost friendships, the lost illusions, the lost excuses, and the lost opportunity for self-righteousness. And then through prayer and some conversation with some key people to bless those losses and let them go, give them to God, bless the grief and hand it over. And it's kind of like opening Pandora's box and all the shadows come pouring out. But once those shadows have dispersed and been blessed on their way, then there's the opportunity to see the true and lasting treasures of the light. Treasures like hope and love and faith and courage and community and patience and commitment. So that took more time and energy than I had expected on this trip. And more Kleenex, a whole lot more Kleenex. But that time was a great gift to me. And I hope that I can bring that gift back to Montclair Presbyterian Church in ways that will be meaningful in our life together. And that's the third part of this time of reflection, of looking to see what's there, which is looking at this next year in our work together, in our life and ministry together, to see what's at the heart of it. I've been looking for a good metaphor. I am a fan of metaphors that open up the world, that bring new vision and a new sense of possibility and things that never would have occurred to me without the help of that door-opening metaphor. So I have been kind of open to that, see what that metaphor might be during these last few weeks. What am I going to be going home to? What will we be together as a church? There are lots of projects and activities and great things going on that I'm very excited about. But what I was asking is, what's the defining image that I can hold like the seashell in my pocket and be reminded of in the midst of the busyness of the work, not the project, not the list of tasks and things to do? So, I was looking for it, reading poems, reading things, talking to people. And then one night there was this lovely experience. Chandler and I had just gotten back to Grand Rapids after this couple of weeks of vacationing up north. And we'd been out one evening to hear some music at this little local folk club and had come home late. And across the street from his condominium, there's the Veterans Park, and there's a side street that comes in kind of right in front of the condominium building. And then here on the corner across the street is the Civic Theater, which is this large, very active, all-volunteer community theater. Second largest all-volunteer theater in the country or something like that. They're very proud of it. It's very cool. And during the summer, they'd been doing lots of kids' shows for children. And at this point in time, for a couple of weeks, they were doing two shows a day. In the afternoons, it was Sleeping Beauty and all the little kids coming in. And then in the evenings, it was High School Musical and this Disney show. So in the evenings, it was teenagers and their families or groups of teenagers coming to the theater. You'd see them all pour in at 7:30 or 8, pour back out, and the show was over. We'd hear all the ruckus. And because it was all volunteer, it was local kids. So you've got local, the story of High School Musical. I've never seen the movie or the play, but it's a bunch of high school kids putting on a musical. So then you have all these high school, Grand Rapids high school kids doing a musical about high school kids doing a musical. So this evening, the show had already ended and people had already left before Chandler and I got home, and the streets had been cleared of cars, except a couple of cars on this side street that we could see. And we were just sitting having a glass of wine late in the evening. And all of a sudden we heard all this ruckus, teenage, ebullient noises, and then music put on the sound system of one of the cars playing away. And just laughter and energy. And I said, oh, it must be the cast from High School Musical getting done, coming out of the theater. So we just went over and stood at the window and looked down at all these kids laughing, maybe a dozen, 15 kids standing in the street, all, adrenalized because they'd just done this show and because they were teenagers and it was the middle of the night. And the music that was playing was from the show. And we're just standing there watching and enjoying the energy. And one of the kids sees us up there on the eighth floor and waves, hi. So we wave back down, hi. And then all the kids saw us and they all waved, hi. So we wave back down, the music's playing away. And all of a sudden, you see them sort of talk and gather, and all of a sudden they fanned out and they did the dance from the show in the middle of the street for us, for two people on the 8th floor. It was, yeah, it was just awesome. It still just brings chills. It was like magic. And they got to the end and they bowed and we clapped, and one of the kids says, "Thank you, you've been a wonderful audience." And it was like a dream. And the next morning I woke up and I thought, did that really happen? And then I thought, that was the metaphor. You've been waiting for it, Karen. It just got dropped. I mean, how obvious can it be? That was something special. I'm glad you paid attention. And what I thought was, that's what being the church is all about. People coming together and dancing for the sheer joy of it. An audience of two, or an audience of the Trinity, maybe. I'm not sure how we could work that metaphor a little bit more. But just that people, you know, here are these kids who had certain gifts and skills, passion, training, hard work. And that's what we do here. We bring our gifts and our skills and our passion and our training and our hard work, whether it's art or music or finance or administration or education or youth ministry or social justice work. Whatever it is, those things are gathered into this place and are encouraged and are enabled to be put into the service of God and God's world. And some of it's really hard work. These are hard times, challenging times. But at the heart of it, I hope and pray that it is work we do with that kind of joy, ebullience, just for the ecstasy of it, for the pleasure of being together and of seeing what we can do together, seeing what we can create together. Because when we look at it to see what's there in our life and purpose as a church, at the heart of life is that unquenchable joy of God. God's joy in us, our joy in her, God dancing with us, God applauding us, God encouraging us along. And why would we not rejoice? I want to read this psalm. I will extol you, O Lord, for you have drawn me up and not let my fears rejoice and have power over me. O Lord, I cried to you for help and you have healed me. Sing praises to God, O you faithful ones, and give thanks to God's holy name. Weeping may linger for the night, but joy comes with the morning. You have turned my mourning into dancing. You have taken off my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, so that my soul may praise you and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks to you forever. Amen.